Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Growth, a History, and a Reckoning is a nonfiction economics book by Daniel Susskind that examines the history, meaning, and consequences of economic growth. Rather than treating growth as an unquestioned good or an outright evil, the book frames it as a policy and moral problem with real trade-offs. Susskind argues that growth has delivered extraordinary benefits, higher living standards, longer lives, and broad reductions in poverty. At the same time, he shows that the pursuit of growth has also contributed to inequality, environmental strain, and political and social distortions. The book is not a technical macroeconomics manual, but a wide-ranging public argument about how modern societies should think about prosperity. Its purpose is to explain why growth became central to economic life, why it remains difficult to replace, and how it might be redirected, so that it better reflects social values beyond GDP alone. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, how economic growth became the central goal of modern policy. Susskind begins by showing that economic growth is a relatively modern obsession. For much of human history, societies lived with long periods of stagnation, and policymakers did not treat growth as a permanent public objective. The book traces how industrialization, Enlightenment thinking, and the rise of economic measurement gradually made growth appear both possible and necessary. This historical framing matters because it challenges the assumption that growth is natural or inevitable. Instead, the book presents growth as a social achievement built on institutions, incentives, and sustained knowledge creation. By locating growth in history, rather than treating it as a timeless law, Susskind gives readers a clearer view of why modern economies are organized around expansion and why debates about slowing or redirecting it are so difficult. The point is not simply that growth happened, but that societies learned to expect it, rely on it, and politically reward it. Secondly, the growth dilemma: prosperity alongside inequality, damage, and alienation. One of the book's core ideas is the growth dilemma, the tension between the benefits of economic expansion and its costs. Susskind does not deny that growth has transformed human welfare. He emphasizes its role in reducing poverty, improving health, and lengthening lives. But he also argues that this progress has come with heavy side effects: environmental degradation, climate change, widening inequality, and pressure on political and social life. The value of this section lies in its refusal to reduce the issue to a simple moral binary. Growth is not merely good because it raises output, and it is not simply bad because it creates harms. It is a mixed phenomenon whose benefits and costs are distributed unevenly. That matters because many public debates focus on GDP as if it were a full measure of national success. Susskind pushes readers to see that rising output can coexist with social damage, and that the main challenge is not to deny growth's achievements, but to confront the trade-offs it leaves behind. Thirdly, why GDP is an incomplete measure of progress. Susskind gives sustained attention to GDP because it sits at the center of modern debates about growth. He argues that GDP is useful as a measure of economic activity, but poor as a summary of human well-being. It captures market production, yet misses many important dimensions of life, including distribution, environmental quality, and forms of value that are not priced in markets. The book therefore criticizes both blind GDP worship and simplistic efforts to discard GDP altogether. Instead, it recommends a more balanced dashboard approach, where GDP remains one indicator among others. This is an important distinction because the book is not anti-measurement. It is anti-reductionism. Susskind's argument is that policy becomes distorted when a single number is treated as if it can represent the whole of social progress. By separating measurement from judgment, he shows that better public debate requires better metrics, but also a willingness to ask questions that no statistic can answer on its own. Fourthly, directed growth and the role of innovation in overcoming scarcity. A major claim in the book is that growth depends less on consuming finite resources and more on generating new ideas. Susskind presents innovation as the engine of growth, arguing that economies expand when they discover more productive ways to use existing resources rather than simply using more of them. This is why the book places such emphasis on knowledge, research, and institutions that support experimentation. From that perspective, the old claim that growth must stop because the planet is finite is too simplistic. The constraint is not only material scarcity, but also the rate at which societies produce and apply useful ideas. Still, Susskind does not treat innovation as a magic solution. He argues instead for directed growth, meaning growth that is deliberately steered toward better social outcomes and away from harmful ones. That makes this section more practical than utopian. It asks how governments, firms, and institutions can encourage productive innovation while limiting environmental and social damage. The result is a reformist rather than revolutionary vision of economic change. Lastly, mini-publics and democratic trade-offs in a world that cannot have everything at once. The book ends by turning from economics to politics. Susskind argues that some of the hardest questions around growth are not technical but moral. Societies often cannot maximize growth, equality, and environmental protection simultaneously, so they must decide which trade-offs matter most. To handle those choices, he proposes mini-publics, small deliberative forums, where citizens can discuss contested issues in a more reflective way than conventional electoral politics usually allows. The point is not that these bodies will solve the growth dilemma once and for all, but that they may help societies confront it more honestly. This proposal is distinctive because it links the economics of growth to democratic legitimacy. Rather than leaving value judgments to experts or technocrats, Susskind wants citizens involved in deciding what should count as progress. Even if readers remain skeptical about mini-publics, the idea reinforces the book's central message: growth is not just an economic statistic, but a political choice about what kind of future a society wants to build. In conclusion, Growth: A History and a Reckoning is best suited to readers who want a serious, non-technical account of why economic growth remains such a powerful and controversial idea. Policymakers, students of economics, public affairs readers, and general readers interested in climate policy, inequality, and measurement will all find value in it. The book is especially useful for people who sense that debates about growth are often trapped between two extremes: uncritical celebration and total rejection. Susskind offers a more careful middle position, one that acknowledges the historical benefits of growth while insisting that its costs must be taken seriously. What makes the book stand out is its combination of broad historical perspective, institutional analysis, and political reflection. It does not stop at criticizing GDP, nor does it simply repeat familiar claims about sustainability. Instead, it asks how growth is produced, how it is measured, and how societies might direct it more responsibly. That makes it a strong entry point for readers who want a nuanced framework rather than a slogan. If you would like to support Daniel Susskind, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.